Good morning. It's a pleasure to be with you all. I'm glad you can make it out. Spring is here at last. Isn't that awesome? Spring is here. You know, they're saying now that temperature is no indication of climate change. Of course, that's not what they used to say. You say that the rising temperature was proof of global warming, but now temperature doesn't have anything to do with climate change. It's not just global warming, it's climate change that we're worried about. You know, science is a funny thing. I like science. I like reading about science. I follow it as much as I can. I like most aspects of science. I'll read a book about geology on occasion. I've read a couple books on geology. I've read a couple books on climate. I've read several books about biology. And not just textbooks. I've just been always interested in science. Not enough to study it and make a career out of it, but I do like to follow it. But the thing that's interesting about science is it is always politicized. Now, I was going to talk about politics a little bit, but I saw a picture not too long ago that changed my mind. I actually like to talk about science. And as I close my lesson, I'll tell you about this picture I saw. I'd like to read an article that appeared a couple years ago. This is dated June 26, 2008. Great apes should have the right to life and freedom, according to a resolution passed in Spanish Parliament in what could become landmark legislation to enshrine human rights for chimpanzees, gorillas, orangutans, and bonobos. The Environmental Committee in the Spanish Parliament has approved resolutions urging the country to comply with the Great Apes Project, founded in 1993, which argues that non-human hominids should enjoy the right to life, freedom, and not to be tortured. The project was started by the philosophers Peter Singer and Paola Cavalieri, who argued that the great ape is the closest genetic relative to humans, that it displays emotions such as love, fear, anxiety, and jealousy, and should be protected by similar laws. The resolutions have cross-party support, and it is thought they will become law, meaning that potential experiments on apes in Spain will be banned within a year, according to a Reuters report. This is a historic day, to quote the Spanish director of the Great Apes Project, in the struggle for animal rights, and in defense of our evolutionary comrades, which will doubtless go down in the history of humanity. Definitely historic. You know, I have a couple dogs. Dogs are not genetically related to us, at least not closely, so they say. My dogs display emotions such as love, fear, anxiety, and most assuredly jealousy, especially towards one another. I am a conspiracy theorist. I bet you didn't know that. I'm a conspiracy theorist. I know for a fact that there is a conspiracy to kill the vast majority of humanity. These conspirators operate quietly in the shadows, unseen by the media, influencing governments and schools, brainwashing the masses. And this conspiracy is led by one individual, very powerful, and he has many minions. Now, this individual is called by many names. But in the Bible, he's most often referred to as Satan. And he is killing us by turning us away from God, by turning man away from God. A couple of years ago, I had opportunity to spend some time in some public schools. I am not against public schools. You will not hear me say that. But you know, I flipped through some of the textbooks in the classes I was sitting in, and I recalled the textbooks that I grew up using. Now, if I opened up a textbook when I was a kid, you know, you'd have this page. This is the page. It's an open textbook. There might be a picture or a diagram here in this corner with a little caption. Maybe some footnotes down here. I opened up the textbook at this public school a couple years ago, and maybe this whole third of the page was a picture. And then they'd have exploding diagrams, and if I were to guess, I'd say that the textbook contained maybe a quarter, at most, of the words that my textbooks had when I was growing up. We're familiar enough with English. Muse means to think. If you put an A in front of a word, it negates the word that follows. Amuse. If you go to an amusement park, you go to a place where you don't have to think. Do schools teach kids to think critically? Now, see, a critical thinker takes all the evidence, accounts for it, and then makes some assumptions. Textbooks give you the assumptions. For instance, a textbook might say, there are 20 amino acids that occur in nature. That's true. 20 amino acids account for every single protein, which are the building blocks of life. And then they'll say, how does this support the theory of evolution? Now, are they teaching the kids to, or they'll say, discuss how this supports the theory of evolution, or how it proves evolution? Now, that's not teaching kids how to think critically. Because a critical thinker would say, well, first of all, did life evolve? That's the first question. But you start with the assumption that evolution is, and then you ask them to view all the evidence in that paradigm. That's not teaching them how to think critically, that's teaching them what to think. Now, I can prove that a lot of science is religion. Religion requires faith. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. If you open a geology book, they will show you the geologic column. It'll be a picture something like this, with all these strata, and each strata is so many millions of years old. That's what they believe. It occurs nowhere in nature. It only appears in their textbooks, which are their Bibles. That is faith. It's the evidence of things not seen. You don't see the geologic column in nature. In fact, what they say might be this layer, sometimes they find clear up here. Sometimes they don't find it at all. Sometimes they find it here. Sometimes they find it here. Sometimes they find layers that are mixed together from vastly different geologic periods. I'll give you some truths about the geologic column that was made up by a man named Charles Lyell, L-Y-E-L-L. He arbitrarily assigned dates to each of these layers. And by the layers of these geologic strata, they determine the age of the fossils that they find therein. But, to determine the age of the layer, they date by the fossils. They're called index fossils. Now that is something that, in philosophy, is called circular reasoning. So to date the layer, you date the fossil. To date the fossil, you use the date of the layer. And around we go. It's a myth, and it is not proven that you can even, or it's not been shown that you can prove the age of a rock. You have to predetermine the age of a rock, then determine the age of the fossils. However, they find these index fossils in multiple layers, but they don't tend to publish that. They find them mixed with fossils that were supposed to be separated by millions and millions and millions of years. Another proof that it's a religion.
Who's heard of the Big Bang Theory?
You heard of the Big Bang Theory? Alright. Billions and billions of years ago, all the matter and all the energy that makes up our current universe was gathered together in one spot called an infinitesimal singularity. It was so small and so dense, it was about this big. That is faith. And I have to admit, that is more faith than I will ever be able to muster. All the matter and all the energy, actually this dot should be about the size of a pencil dot. This is a pen, felt pen, so it's a little bit, probably about 10 times too big. But what they don't tell you is that even if that was the case, there has to be something outside exert energy on that infinitesimal singularity for it to explode. Something outside. So something else was. Something else was. How about the origins of life? Remember when the prophets would say things like, the idolaters, they say to a stone, you are my father, and to a rock, you have begotten me. Well, that's exactly what evolutionists believe. They believe that in the primordial early earth, rain for millions of years splattered the rocks. And the rocks eroded into the ocean. A mixture of complex chemicals. Lightning struck the chemicals, this probiotic soup. I want you to remember that word, probiotic soup. And the first amino acids were formed. And they combined to the first simple proteins. And that is the origin of life. Proteins are a self-replicating system. Evolution says that we evolved from these proteins to a single-celled organism. We became more and more complex and evolved to higher organisms. And civilization. Remember that when they talk about the development of civilization, they're assuming that we evolved from something that looked like that, and that our ancestors at one point took the first brave steps onto the African savanna, and we stood upright so we could look around and see the lions that were trying to eat us. Well, if you start with that assumption, of course you're going to assume that we were pastoral nomads in our past, and that it took us thousands and thousands of years to come up with a stone tool. And that after that, it took us thousands and thousands of years to figure out how to mine minerals from the earth and metals and to create weapons. And it took thousands and thousands of years for us to figure out how to farm. And then as we learned how to farm, we learned how to settle down and enjoy our world. And that's when we built the first cities. I agree, it would take a group of monkeys a long, long time to build the first city, to build their first city. Have you ever noticed that when you look at science, and I'm not talking about all science, but maybe geology, biology, paleontology, anthropology, things like that, they almost always say the opposite of what the Bible tells us. Almost always. Well, let's take a look at some of those things, but before we do, since I've mentioned monkeys here, let's talk a little bit about DNA. Oh, we're having fun this morning. DNA. Well, They tell us that about 3.5 to 4 billion years ago, that the story I told you about the rain and the lightning on the rocks and the probiotic complex chemical soup of the early oceans, that the first proteins evolved about 3.5 to 4 billion years ago. Now, in your textbooks, they'll say that something like, while not proven, it serves as a discourse for inquiry. And what they're not saying to you is that there is no other discourse for inquiry, because in their minds, there's no other possibilities. It's okay to discuss how that might have happened, but not if that happened. Now, you may be familiar with these names, Harold Urey and Stanley Miller. And in the 50s, they wanted to try and understand the early atmosphere of the Earth. So they created this experiment with a bunch of tubes and tried to, with those tubes, put in the right mixture of gases and simulate the Earth's so-called primitive atmosphere. And they put some things in it to simulate what they thought was the Earth's so-called probiotic soup of its oceans. Now, what they did was they cycled methane, ammonia, which is necessary for amino acids, water, and hydrogen. Spun this around these tubes, and they added a spark to simulate this lightning. Because what they say is if you get all the right molecules together and add energy, you can spontaneously produce life. Well, guess what? They did create amino acids through this process. And amino acids are the building blocks of proteins. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment, but the atmosphere of this planet had methane, ammonia, water, and hydrogen. No oxygen. Oxygen's an interesting thing. You know, we breathe oxygen, so we know we have to have it. But did you know that had they added oxygen to their atmosphere, their experiment would have failed. They would have never been able to produce amino acids. Because, like I said, you need ammonia to create amino acids. If your planet lacks an ozone layer, see, ozone protects the Earth from UV rays. UV rays destroy ammonia. So they didn't include oxygen in their experiment. So their Earth had no ozone layer, which would have destroyed the ammonia. You can't get the amino acids that way. But also, had they included ozone and oxygen in their primitive atmosphere, the amino acids that were created would have quickly oxidized and been destroyed. And you see this process all the time. If you cut apples or cut a banana, what happens to it? Very quickly it oxidizes, it turns brown. That's why you have to put lemon juice on it to keep it from oxidizing. If you don't paint your car, it quickly rusts. That is oxidizing. If you have ozone in the mix, it oxidizes the amino acids. So, to put it succinctly, so we can all understand it, you cannot get life to spontaneously evolve without oxygen. However, you cannot get life to spontaneously evolve with it. So this whole experiment is a fraud. Okay, well, let's keep going with it a little bit. They drew out these amino acids during the experiment so that they wouldn't have to suffer the same effects of the atmosphere that they had been placed in. So instead of letting nature take its course and subjecting these amino acids to the atmosphere that they were placed in, they pulled them out. Not very scientific. Not speaking too well of the natural process. In other words, they would have very quickly died and dissolved in that atmosphere. Also, the textbooks will say something like, what they produced was a mixture that was rich in amino acids. Rich in amino acids. Well, let's look at that. What they produced as they ran this stuff through these tubes was 85% tar. Do things survive very well in tar? 13% carboxylic acid. both tar and carboxylic acid are anemic to life. 98% of what they produced in this experiment was anemic to life. See, tar bonds very quickly to everything. And it'll certainly bond quickly to amino acids. 2% was rich to them. Now, if I placed a plate of food in front of you, and I said it was rich in nutrients, and then proceeded to tell you that 98% of it will kill you, but 2% is good for you. Well, you know, that's what basically we do with rat poison. Except we do it in the opposite, to get them to eat. We do it roughly 95 to 98% good, and roughly 2 to 5% bad. It's ridiculous to say that these amino acids, these 2%, were rich. Furthermore, about these amino acids, they created two. All life on Earth requires 20 different amino acids arranged in the right order in a complex series in order for you to even get close to a self-replicating system. Also, these proteins require DNA and RNA. DNA is your code that tells the RNA, which links to the protein, the amino acids, and tells them what to do. Well, we'll talk about DNA in a minute, but an amino acid is left-handed, and RNA is right-handed. That's so that they can come together and create life. What they produced were amino acids that were both right and left-handed, so they didn't get anywhere close to anything that could create life. There are hundreds of amino acids that must combine in the right order to create even the simplest proteins. And without that, you do not have a viable protein. Here's a fact. Amino acids unbond faster in water than they bond. They unbond faster in water than they bond. And the lie you see in all of our textbooks is that life evolved in the oceans. Well, if the building blocks of life unbond faster in water, in other words, the water dissolves them faster than they can bond, is quickly going to disperse and you're not going to end up with anything. That is a fact. Well, I think I said enough about that particular experiment. Let me ask you a question. What if someday they do create life in a laboratory experiment? Would that scare you? Would that shake your faith? Think about it. It shouldn't, because all that will prove is that you need intelligence to create life. That's all that will ever prove at best, and besides the fact that they are far, far away from creating life in a laboratory. How about the tree of life that you see in the textbooks? You know, it starts off with a simple organism, then branches off, and we get men and lizards and birds and all that kind of stuff. Well, Mary Leakey told the AP, and Stephen Gould, both prominent evolutionists, admitted the truth that there is no evidence for the tree of life in the fossil record. And it is by inference only, in Stephen Gould's words, inference only, however reasonable, that we can recreate it. This idea that we evolved from simple unicellular organisms is ridiculous. Did you know that the hair, the cilia on a bacteria, is connected to a motor inside the cell of the bacteria that can spin it at 100,000 RPM. A bacteria can swim through the scaled equivalent of peanut butter at 60 miles an hour. Can you do that? Can you swim through peanut butter at 60 miles an hour? Are we getting better? I thought evolution said we were supposed to be getting better. It looks like we're getting worse if we evolved from Uncle Bacteria. Well, let's talk a little bit about DNA very quickly. They'll say that DNA proves a commonality and a relationship with our most closely related genetic cousins, the chimpanzees, and then the apes, or the gorillas, and then the orangutans. They'll even use words like this has been verified by genetic research. Well, that's not true. DNA is the most complex molecule in the universe. Now, it is estimated that your body is made of at least 50 trillion cells. And in each one of your cells is the complete code of your body, your DNA. If we were able to extract all the DNA in your body We could fit it into 2 tablespoons. Doesn't sound like much. That seems reasonable. However, if we unwound your DNA and stretched it out, we could place one end on the surface of the Earth and place the other end on the surface of the Moon, and we could make that round trip 5 million times. Wow. Do you remember in Psalm 139, this famous passage where David says we are fearfully and wonderfully made? In my version, it says, you wrought me in the secret place, talking about his mother's womb. Some versions say, you wove me. Isn't that interesting? He was woven. See, when you're in the womb, God is working there. It's been shown that from conception to birth, on an average day, a human baby reproduces 15,000 cells, not per day, per minute. 15,000 replications. And as it grows and develops, the cells differentiate and start producing the different organs and systems of your body. And each individual cell is more complex than the space shuttle. How would you like to work at a place that could produce 15,000 space shuttles in a minute? Now, how would you like to be the supplier for the raw materials? You say nightmare? It's been mathematically calculated that the probability of just one DNA strand emerging itself by chance. I know none of us, at least I hope none of us are gamblers, but if I said let's make a bet, and I'll give you 1 in 10 odds. Are those good odds? No. Your probability of winning is not all that great. Well, the chance of a single DNA strand arranging itself and being able to replicate itself is 1 in 10 to the 119,000th power. That is a huge number. The visible universe, its diameter is about 10 to the 28th power inches in diameter. This is a big number. Basically, what this number is telling us is that the chances of DNA arranging itself is zero. That's not something that the textbooks tend to put in there. A genetic perspective on the origin and history of humans is an article written by a doctor whose last name is Takahata. Let me try to pronounce his first name. To quote him, he says, even with DNA sequence data, we have no direct access to the process of evolution. The vanished past can be reconstructed only by creative imagination. Creative imagination. In spite of all of that, do you remember finding out that humans and chimps are genetically, the DNA is 98.6% similar? Did that kind of freak you out a little bit? I have to admit, I didn't question my faith, but I was like, wow, that's going to convince a lot of people that we've definitely evolved from a common ancestor with the ape. 98.6%. Well, that is a little freaky. Well, the entire human genome has been decoded. However, only 3% of its operability is understood. Only 3% of that human genome. In other words, we only understand 3% of DNA's function in the human genetic code. So, writing out the whole code is completely different than understanding the entire code. And I'd like to quote Dr. Barry Maddox of the Human Genome Project. Now, the genetic difference between a human and his nearest relative, the chimpanzee, is at least 1.6%. That doesn't sound like much, but calculated out, that is a gap of at least 48 million nucleotides. And a change of only 3 nucleotides is fatal to a creature. There is no possibility of change. I'm going to repeat that. That doesn't sound like much, but calculate it out. That is a gap of 48 million nucleotides, and a change of only 3 nucleotides is fatal to a creature. And a nucleotide is a molecule that joins together with RNA to program a cell. Well, what about all this
amino acids and proteins and DNA? There are 20 amino acids
in all of nature. Every living thing from a plant to a single-celled organism to a human is made of these 20 amino acids. There are 4, and we'll see if I can make sure I spell this right.
There are only 4 nucleic acids. You remember talking about DNA in your school. There was the A, the T, the C, and the G. There's only 4. Every single living thing on Earth contains all 4 of these nucleic acids.
All books written in English
contain the same 26 letters
of the alphabet. The English alphabet is the code by which books in English are written. What evolution is trying to tell us is that books evolved through a long process that started with one letter, and then it differentiated randomly through mutation, and A became B, and then C, and pretty soon stuff started making sense. Well, if you open a book, and all it contained was a series of A's, would that make any sense whatsoever? You see, these 20 amino acids are the alphabet of life that God created when He decided to create life. Same with the 4 nucleic acids. They inform the alphabet what God wants that to do. Genetic similarity has nothing to do with relationship. All it proves is that God used the same alphabet to create all of life. That's all it will ever prove. For instance, they say, well, look at the hand of the chimp. It is so much like our hand. Well, what does Genesis chapter 1 say that God made the fruit and the herbs and the grasses for? For all of mankind and all the animals to eat. Well, would it have been fair of God to create a monkey without hands? Make it awful hard to grab the fruit. Let's say, well, the shape of the teeth proves not only a relationship, but what it ate. Well, not necessarily. The fruit bat is called the fruit bat because it only eats fruit. Have you seen the teeth on a fruit bat? Looks like a vampire. The shape of an animal's tooth has nothing to do with what it ate. A lion could have perfectly eaten apples and oranges. What it tends to show, animals with big canines tend to eat nuts and fruits. A bear is a perfect example. It's an omnivore. It eats both nuts and fruits and berries, primarily nuts. The shape of an animal's tooth has nothing to do with what it ate. They say, look at a whale. It has a vestigial pelvis. That was proof that it was once a large land animal that chose to jump in the water. Well, that vestigial pelvis actually happens to be necessary for reproduction in an animal so large. They have lied over and over again to us. And I haven't even begun to talk about what geology tells us about the origins of life and what other aspects of biology tell us, climatology. They have a religion, they have a faith, and they have a reason that they want you to believe in. It's because they've been seduced and deceived by Satan, and Satan wants people to die. That's the only reason for it. You know, it's interesting. I was talking to Wade a couple weeks ago. We were talking about the 19th century. 19th century was a weird, weird, weird time period. It was like the 1960s stretched out over 100 years. bizarre. And the 19th century birthed the 20th century, and the early 20th century was not a pleasant place. We killed millions of people in the early part of the first half of the 20th century. Millions. The 19th century gave birth to communism and fascism. It gave birth to eugenics. It gave birth to a lot of bad stuff. It gave birth to evolution. You know, evolutionary thought, the idea that we're just advanced animals, it still impacts us today. Now, because, you know, we've been listening here for about 30 minutes now, and I guess the question is any of this stuff really important? Well, some of us are going to be more interested in this than others. That's fine. That's probably natural. Well, when you look at history and you understand where we've come from and where we've gone, it becomes more important. Now, I mentioned earlier that I had decided to talk about politics earlier, but I saw a picture that changed my mind. I've been pretty involved with the political process the last year or so. I imagine many of us have. It seems like there's a lot of change that's going to take place. I saw a picture that made me realize that there are more important things than my tax rate. And I am sad for this country. I am sad for this country. You know, it's amazing what useful science can do. Useful science is amazing. You know that for the last decade plus, they can pull a womb out of a mother and open up the uterus and perform surgery on an unborn child. Now, the womb is an amazing thing. It is the only probiotic soup that has ever been on Earth. They can perform surgery, even open heart surgery, on an unborn child. And the stem cells, those undifferentiated cells that are packed in the umbilical cord, will go right to the place where surgery was performed and heal it. And when the baby is born, there's nary a scar. Jerry, do you have any scars from surgery? That's amazing. That is amazing. The womb that God created can do that. We live in a culture that will fine you $25,000 if you steal or break the egg of a bald eagle. Because the unhatched eagle has achieved eaglehood. But our culture will not allow personhood to be granted to an unborn child. That is sick. That is a degraded mind. Only the product of a degraded, debased mind can even conceive of something like that. That's how far our culture has fallen. When you read the Declaration of Independence, now I have a lot of differences with them theologically, but they understood one thing. You and I and our government did not grant life. They understood that life was given by God. And who are we to think that that is our right to decide who lives and who dies? When did God give us that power? When a baby is in the womb, that is God's work. That is His craftsmanship. Who are we? Man. You know, abortion is, they often change the language so that they can stomach what they do. They number the parts of a baby. And during the procedure, they might say something like, number one has successfully been decompressed and is ready for extraction. Number one is the baby's head. What that means, that's code, for I have successfully liquefied the child's brain and sucked it out And then with my tongs, that look like the tongs you might pull out a salad with, I have crushed its skull so that I can pull it from the womb of its mother. Does that bother you? It's amazing how far we've come. What's been the price? There was a documentary I saw. It's called The Instinct of Music. They're able to insert a camera with a microphone into a mother's womb with a developing infant. And they were finally able to prove something that they long expected, that babies in the womb can hear. And they played nice, gentle music. They played not so nice, gentle music. The baby showed signs of distress when the not so gentle music was played. When the gentle music was played, it smiled. It showed signs of pleasure. The documentary came out in 1984, I think. The first time an ultrasound of an abortion was captured. Before the procedure started, the child's resting heart rate was about 140 beats per minute. As the procedure began, and it began to realize that its sanctuary was being violated, its heartbeat skyrocketed to 200 plus. What they do is they stick these instruments in there and they try to break the amniotic sac that surrounds the child. And then, once that amniotic sac is broken, they stick another instrument in there, and the purpose of this instrument, and they ram it around in there and jam it around, is to break up the body of the child and dismember it from his head. See, the body can basically be liquefied and sucked out. The head cannot. So that's why they break it afterwards. As soon as the child's amniotic sac was broken, and the cruel instrument actually made contact and began the process of breaking up its body, it emitted a silent scream. The ultrasound showed that the child opened its mouth in terror. The abortionist who performed the abortion that was taped was present for the editing. When he saw that, he left the room for several minutes. He came back and finished the editing, but he never performed another abortion again. The lady who had the abortion that was taped, she had already had 7. And she was an advocate, big time, of abortion. She never had another abortion. She never advocated for it again, because she was also present at the editing of that tape. I want you to go home, and I want you to do an image search on your computer. Type in open fetal surgery. There's an image that occurs 3 or 4 times in the first 5 images available, and it changed a lot of things for me about what's really important in life. There is a picture of a uterus that's been pulled out of a mother so that they can perform spina bifida, surgery to heal spina bifida. Can you believe that? They can heal spina bifida while the baby's still in the womb. But anyway, the baby's developed about 5 months. And its skin is so thin and translucent that the blood makes it look bluish purple. So it obviously has a ways to go. And by law, it is not a person. However, there's a close-up of the doctor's gloved hands around the womb. You know, they say a picture is worth 1,000 words. Man, when I saw this, I was speechless. That baby had reached out and took hold of that doctor's finger. That is a person! That is a person reaching out. This world has been invaded. The sanctuary of this mother's womb has been violated. It is reaching out. Help me. Save me. God put in us a will to live. Unless you go out killing people, you do not deserve to have that right taken away. That is God-given right. Now, I wasn't going to talk about politics, and I'm not going to tell you who to vote for. But if you can vote for someone that advocates for that, then something is wrong with you. You cannot stand idly by and pretend that that stuff doesn't happen. But if there's more important issues, we're talking about a fundamental right, something that God gives us. Not the Republicans and not the Democrats. And I'm not picking on one party. There are pro-life Democrats and there are pro-choice Republicans. When you vote, you need to ask them, where do you stand? What kind of man are you or woman? Because I decided when I saw that picture, I would never vote again if my only options were someone who thought that that was right. You know, a murderer deserves to be put to death. A nation that endorses, promotes, and enshrines a life to kill an innocent child while it's still in its mother's room, that nation deserves to die. That nation deserves to die. There's so many more important things in life than your job, and your tax rate, and your house, and your car. We really need to think about all the decisions we make. I'm going to go to 2 Peter. And I'm sorry, I've spoken a lot longer than I intended to. But that picture really blew me away. 2 Peter chapter 3. Why do people choose to believe in evolution and all that hooey? Knowing this verse, that scoffers will come in the last days walking according to their own lusts. It's because of our lusts that we don't want to believe the Bible. And saying, where is the promise of His coming? There was a documentary that came out not too long ago called Religulous. And the documentarian says, what's Jesus waiting for? Where is the promise of His coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. For this they willfully forget. Now, willfully forget means stupid on purpose. Willfully forget that by the word of God, the heavens were of old. And the earth standing out of water and in the water, by which the world that then existed perished, being flooded with water. But the heavens and the earth, which are now preserved by the same word, are reserved for fire until the day of judgment and perdition of ungodly men. That is why people scoff the Bible. That is why they don't believe in creation. That is why they don't believe in the flood. Because to admit that those things are possible, that those things are true, is to admit that there's a creator that I'm going to have to answer to, and you are going to have to answer to. And in the words of a very prominent early evolutionist, that is unthinkable. It's not that believing in God is unreasonable. It's not that science proves the Bible wrong. Quite the contrary. It's that they don't want to believe it. That's all. You don't need to be scared of the genetic similarity between a chimp and a human. All that proves is that God is very economic when He creates stuff. Why reinvent the wheel if you've got a perfectly good wheel? That's all that proves. Languages are complex things. Brady pointed out some time ago, this might be the most powerful symbol in the English language. That's the beginning of my dash. I did not choose to be born on March 4th, 1976. I didn't have a choice about that.
The date that follows, and if the averages work out, probably my wife will pay someone, or the government will pay for it. The second date. And that could be a long time from now. I have no idea. What if it's this date? What if this is the last day any of you ever seen me alive on earth? I'm not going to commit suicide. So I don't get to choose this second date either. I had nothing to do with that. My parents probably accidentally had a hand in that one, but they didn't choose it. And I didn't choose it either. Since I will not commit suicide, I don't have a hand in this one. So I can't do anything about those. But you know what's great about God and our Lord Jesus? I'm not going to have to answer for this. Because I'm not going to commit suicide, I don't have to answer for this one either. I want to answer for that. You will too. A couple of years ago, my wife and I went and visited a young couple. We were taking food over to them. Now, before Labor Day, he had been diagnosed, and he didn't have long to live. We took food over to him twice, once in October and once in November. By Christmas, he was dead. Now, I hadn't seen him in quite a while, so I was, in a sense, looking forward to seeing him again, but at the same time, I was filled with regret about it. Because I knew that on his worst day, he was more genuine, more sincere, more gentle, more honest, more loving, more kind, more compassionate than I ever have been on my best day. And as I sat and talked to him, I said, God, this isn't fair. We should change seats. He's a good guy. I am not. I don't know where he is now. I am not his judge, and I am thankful for that. I am the judge of no man, and I am glad. But I know one thing for sure. He was ready to give his answers for that. Are you? Because if this is your second date on your gravestone, are you prepared to answer for this? Today! But you don't know. He was in his mid-30s. Diagnosed before Labor Day, gone before Christmas. You don't know. I said earlier, I'm scared for my country. I'm scared for some of you. You know, some of you have sat in here Sunday after Sunday, year after year. Listen to invitation after invitation. And you've sat in your seat through all of them. Why? I don't get it. Judgment is coming. And you are going to have to answer for this. What are you willing to bet against your last day? You don't get to choose. If you would like to make yourself right with God, and you need to, whether you've accepted Him before and fallen away, or whether you never have, you need to seriously think, what's going to happen to me after I die? And how do I need to start living today? Please come forward as we stand and sing.